the play is called The Woman Standing on the Moon, and it basically centers on a woman named Mary Latrobe, who's a documentary filmmaker, and she's on a shoot in Fayetteville, North Carolina, documenting extremism in America. And while she's there for about 2 weeks, she's drawn into a whole labyrinth of relationships. That's the way we talk about it. She's there with her boyfriend. They're staying in a house that her ex-husband, who is a history professor and teaches in a local college, has gotten them because they arrived in Fayetteville sort of on a shoestring and at last minute, and he was able to get them that house. And their prime interview subject is a charismatic, real charismatic ex-soldier and his wife, who's a psychic. And so in pursuing those interviews, Mary is really drawn out of, she arrives interested in politics, and the play obviously has a lot to do with extremism in America, so politics is part of its issue. But she's drawn deeper than that because of this interview subject into her own personal story about her own grief, her own loss, her own relationship to her ex-husband, which is not finished. And the play quickly moves away from anything that resembles, you know, a polemic or right-left politics into that more interesting, vital, personal territory. And it becomes an examination of, you know, the way essentially people in the contemporary world deal with a lot of their undigested stuff, like grief and loss. And that's the initial presentation of what the play is about. But I think something else is true, which is important, because it's not simply a drama about, you know, loss and relationships provoked by, you know, this strange setting and this particular task of making a documentary. It's very much a play that takes place in the contemporary moment, and that's the backdrop. And the play sees the contemporary moment, and indeed the contemporary moment is one of fragmentation and fear, and that gets expressed out in the world in an awful lot of conflict about belief and religion and ideology. And we just saw it this summer, you know, I mean, this, we began casting when that Norwegian shot all the young kids at that camp that was associated with liberal causes in Norway, and he identified himself as a white Christian European saving Europe from the encroaching Muslims. You know, we have, just as we were working on the play and rehearsing it, again continued uprising in the Middle East. A lot of those people who they're rising up against are strong men who are put in there by America because we wanted to prevent Islamists from coming into power. And then in our own country, you know, a lot of sense of political paralysis and fear has led to a lot of focus on people like Michelle Bachmann and Rick Perry, who are fundamentalists, who believe in biblical literalism. Both of those candidates are what we call dominionists. They believe, according to dominionism, they believe that not only should Christianity, it's a Christian country, Christianity should have a voice in government, but it should be the only voice. So we're really in a time with a lot of kind of radical fundamental beliefs. Our play is opening on the 10th anniversary of 9/11. So that's characterized an awful lot of our politics, and we often see it out there. You know, that's something that happens in Kabul or Cairo, or something that happens in the Congress, or something that happens on, you know, a political trail appealing to the Tea Party. And we're just watching it on television. Well, what this play does is it looks at the way that all of that reality has seeped into the unconscious of a country and has seeped into the lives of ordinary people. So they themselves are searching for what side are they on, you know, what do they believe in? And people tend to hold those beliefs with a greater a sense of extremism and sort of desperation because of all the confusion surrounding them. So that's a very important kind of soil in which we tell our story about, you know, they're not ordinary people, but they're not extraordinary people either. They're bright, they're progressive, they're interested in in doing something, finding meaning in the contemporary world.
Okay, what would you like the audience to get out of this play? What do you think would be the perfect response for you?
Argument. I would love people to disagree, because, you know, I didn't write any purely black or purely white, purely good, purely complicated, purely... no villains here, no heroes. Everybody is complicated. And so I think as you begin to look at the play, because Mary is making a documentary on extremism, and she's interviewing someone in Fayetteville near the Army base. So we say, oh, well, you know, this is obviously a liberal play, you know, that's kind of going to pillory right-wing fundamentalists. Well, that's not what we do. You know, everybody becomes kind of a living person. And I would hope that at some point in the play, you really are on the side of every one of the characters, at least momentarily. And at the end, all right, this is certainly not in any sense a liberal dream solution, you know, where progressive rationality wins. Ultimately, nobody wins, but everybody is given a sort of opportunity to grow. So I would like people to be kind of disturbed that it doesn't take the usual kind of political camp line. It doesn't fall into an ideological column. And I want people to be delighted at that, but also somewhat puzzled at that, you know, well, because we're so used to situating things politically.
Who do you think is the typical audience for the performance?
It's interesting. You know, I find that New York audiences are fascinatingly diverse when the price comes down. So I'm looking for, because we do not have expensive tickets, you know, we are at $18, and we're using a code $15, which, by the way, you can get on our website at www.thewomanstandingonthemoon.com. Our e-blast has that code as well. So I'm looking forward to a real diverse audience. I know that this film was for this film. This play began several years ago. It was selected to be a part of the Hot Ink International Play Reading Festival that the Tisch School ran at NYU. And the audience there was, I would say, half of the audience was students. And then we developed it further. I mean, Bernard Cummings, who's the director, was with the production from the beginning. Krista Kimlico Jones, who's our lead actress who plays Mary Latrobe, was with that at the beginning. And as we developed it, again, we had a workshop and a lot of students. I think that the issues of the politics, the culture, and America's foreign involvement in the last 10 years, and the way this impacts ordinary people, the issue of how you find some ground to stand on and some kind of real productive belief system in this world, these are real issues for people in college and graduating right now. This is the world they're coming out into. So I would really like them to be a part of it, but at the same time, you know, our characters in the play range from early 20s to mid-50s. So there's something in there for mid and older audiences as well. I suppose the only one who might be excluded is someone who absolutely does not want to think, doesn't want to see anything difficult. Which does not mean there's a lot of humor in this, and there's a lot of suspense. In fact, there's a thriller element. In places, a little bit of a ghost story, you know, because of the psychic wife's involvement. So it's got a lot of entertainment value too, but it's ultimately going to pose serious questions to people.
Okay, considering all the elements that are at work and the subject material, you need very solid actors to be able to.
We have a terrific cast.
Mm-hmm. You want to talk about them?
It's interesting. Again, first we have our lead actress, Krista Kimlico Jones, who's very interesting. She, again, was recruited by Bernard Cummings, the director, for the first reading at NYU in 2009. And Krista is, like a number of the people involved in this cast, from Texas. She's also, in addition to being an actress, she's the co-founder and associate artistic director of Theater East, and she's a teacher at Stella Adler and at NYU, and she's kind of the center here, And what's noteworthy, in addition to the real, you know, vibrant talent of this group, is that a number of the younger actors and actually members of the design team were all graduates of the conservatory at Purchase College, and where Binard was, you know, directed a number of plays. And so Taylor Flowers, who plays the ex-military policeman, and Sarah Saunders, who plays his wife Belle, they're from that program. Stephen Michael Lang, who plays he doubles as a part of Mary's boyfriend and a soldier whom she's interviewing. He's a recent graduate of that program. Diana Stahl, who plays a young soldier, is a part of that program. The lighting designer, the stage designer, the costume designer are all come from that program. So that's really noteworthy, that this is a superb conservatory. Even our stage manager was trained there. This is a profound and, I think, challenging and excellent training ground. And these people come out with tremendous enthusiasm. And, you know, we're lucky to have them. James Early plays Mary's ex-husband. He's a very extraordinary actor and a very important addition to our cast. And he has done a lot of work with the Shakespeare Theater of New Jersey. That's where, you know, Binard met him, and that's how he sort of came on board. I don't think I'm leaving anybody out, but if I am, you know, it's just because of forgetfulness, not because they're not very talented.
Is there anything else that you want to say about the production that you think are... our readers and listeners would like to know?
I don't know. Do you have any other questions?
No, not at all.
About such things?
No, I think you did a good job of just basically previewing the performance, I think.
Essentially, I would like them to come. It's going to be a great show. And a show is never complete without a good audience. That's the extra chemical that really brings it alive. So we are all looking forward to, you know, real good audiences. I am in particular, not only for this play, but so people can see this terrific talent that's gathered together. One person I have not mentioned, who is also an important part of this, both our sound designer, Scott O'Brien, who's done, you know, magical work with sound, and Kevin Freck, who worked with the Blue Man Group, and he's our video designer, because, of course, we use a lot of video in this. Not a lot, but significant places we used video, because Mary is a documentary filmmaker. And Kevin himself, in addition to being a video designer for the stage, is also a documentary filmmaker. So he was particularly attracted to this project, and he himself has brought, you know, a real eye and a kind of experience which has been very valuable for all of us. Well, I just can't, you know, complete our conversation appropriately without praising our director, who is a true visionary, Binard Cummings. And I think part of the power that he brings to this production, because he's weaving quite a spell here, is that he's an actor, he's from the Yale Drama School, actor, director, and playwright. So that he comes to the production with such a sensitivity to, you know, what is required to bring fire to actors on stage, but also a kind of sense of the design and a sense of the writing. So he functions also as a kind of dramaturg throughout the whole process. So I just wanted to, you know, mention the fact that he's got a lot of fans out there. He's taught a lot of people, and a lot of people appreciate his unique style. So I think anyone who is listening to this who knows his name will want to come and see his latest work. He's really one of a kind.